Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm Carolyn, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Carolyn.
And so Jeff asked me probably a month ago if I would come up here and share my story, and I agreed, and I knew I was picking up a chip in February, so I was like, oh, that's perfect. You know, it'll help me to reflect and all that, but anyways, I haven't thought much about it until a couple days ago. So anyways, just to qualify myself, my sobriety date is February 23rd, 2012. And I did just pick up a 10-year chip, which is pretty amazing. And so this is very fitting for me to come up here and tell my story. And I have a home group, and it's the Freedom at Four group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsee people, so, you know, I work with sponsees. Anyway, so I'm just going to start. I made notes, but I'm not going to be able to read them or focus on them. So my story is, you know, when I was younger, I know it feels like you go back so far when you come up here to tell your story, but I'll just try to do a brief overview. I was born in Georgia, and I have two sisters. I'm a middle child, and my dad died when I was very young. That was very traumatic. He was in a motorcycle accident, and he died when he was 27. And at that point, my mom had the three of us, you know. So, and I was 6 years old. And anyway, so then I remember as a child being, you know, kind of sad and hurt and felt alone. And, you know, I didn't have my dad. And my mom worked very hard to support us and get herself out of her depression. She had lost a brother in a car accident the year before my dad died, and he was around the same age, and then she lost her husband. And I remember her being very sad when we were growing up, and you know, I remember in fourth grade, I know this is AA, but in fourth grade, there was neighbors that were huffing gas, and I remember huffing gas, and I was about fourth grade. So I would say I've thought before about my first drink, but that would be the first drug. And that's very scary to think about, you know, because, you know, it's funny over time how we remember the different things. And so in fourth grade, you're probably nine, like my grandson's age right now, you know. They were teenagers. They did it, and I did it. I don't remember having another reason other than that's it. You know, they did it, and I did it. And I remember going home and being very sick and telling my mom and her being just so angry. Angry at the neighbor kids, you know, they were a bad influence on me and my sister, you know, and I was just sick. But then as far as my first drink went, I think my mom married somebody and we moved to Florida from Atlanta. We lived in Atlanta and then moved to Jacksonville, Florida. And then my first drink, I think I was about in fifth grade. And, you know, a neighbor brought something over and we drank it. And that was my first boyfriend and my first, you know, drink. And then I remember stealing beers from my stepfather's, you know, his beer sometimes and drinking, you know. And then I don't remember much else, like as far as like doing drinking or drugs or anything like that. Middle school was very, you know, different. You know, we were bused to school, and I don't remember having access or doing, you know, anything then. And high school was different. You know, there was a lot of weed smoking and drinking, and when I drank, I would pretty much blackout drink in high school. And I had a friend, and we would get into clubs. You know, we would drink, go to, you know, before we were 21, obviously, and we would sneak into some clubs that weren't carding back then, and we would drink all night and wake up and go to school the next day. And So then when I drank, it was alcoholically, you know, meaning I blacked out. Once I started, I just kept drinking. And I got married very young. I mean, I graduated high school and I was married at 18. And I met somebody in one of those clubs we snuck into. And I was pregnant, we were married, and I had two children by the age before I was 21 years old. And life seemed pretty good and happy and normal. And, you know, we got married on a riverboat there in Jacksonville. You know, we had a lot of family and friends, and I was 5 months pregnant when we got married, and didn't really, I didn't drink during my pregnancy or, you know, and as my children were younger, I would drink, but I wasn't in the depths of alcoholism at that point. You know, I would drink sometimes and then not drink for a time, you know. But when I did drink, I was very angry. You know, I would get real moody. And so, you know, my heavier drinking came as my kids got older. You know, I'm a young, I got, you know, literally had my children in, before I was 20. So as my kids became teens, I felt like I was really growing up with them. My marriage was okay. You know, we were married, I think 23 years. There were really good times, and then there were some, you know, more volatile times, you know, as far as like us getting along and fighting. And then we started, we had started going to a church maybe when my children were younger, and it was a very controlling church. It was like you went every Wednesday, Sunday, and you didn't miss. If you missed, you were going to hell, you know. I learned a lot about the Bible there, and I got a great foundation in, I don't want to say religion, but really, there were a lot of good things I learned in there, obviously, but there was so much control. My marriage was very controlling also, you know. It was like I was in a lot of these controlling relationships. And some of that is based on some of the abuse that I had when I was younger that I really didn't go through that. I'm not going through that with you guys today. But there was some abuse as when I was younger with a family member. And so I think some of those controlling relationships and whether it was the church or my husband at a young age, he was very controlling of the finances, you know. I worked, but if I got a job and it was taking too much time away from home, then he would be like, you just need to quit. You're not making enough money. It's not worth it for you to work, you know. So it was like he was always making all the decisions and, you know, paying the bills. And if I spent too much money or something, it was, where are you spending? He was, you know, he was so controlling. I mean, he would page me in a grocery store if he did not know where I was at. And, you know, that was traumatic. I didn't know it when I was in it, but it was very traumatic. Having to answer where every dime went, you know, or where I was at every minute of every day. So anyways, as time went on, I was unhappy in that marriage, and we drank together, and then I started drinking more. We had gotten out of that church. He quit going to the church because he felt like it was controlling. And, he quit going, and at that point he met somebody and he started doing another substance. And then I started doing that with him. And then we were drinking more and we were driving around and, you know, we wrecked a few cars, but we never got DUIs or got in any trouble with the law or anything like that. I remember the other night when I was passing, going to downtown, you know, we had gone to a club downtown, a strip club, and driving home, like I drove home, and we took an important part of the car off, you know, going over a median where I got home, but the next day I was like, I don't remember what it was because I don't know cars, but anyways, I had to replace that. You know, we had totaled a couple cars, you know, and did that, but we never got caught. We had with this my ex-husband, we were partying one night at a friend's house, drinking and doing other substances, and we drove home, and probably a few blocks from our house, a car had come out and hit us, and actually, it wasn't our fault, but we were definitely under the influence, and our Tahoe burned to the ground. And we got out of the car, and we put dirt in our, you know, we put dirt in our mouth so we wouldn't smell like alcohol, you know. And we were a few, at that point, I think my daughter was maybe 15 or 16. My kids are just like 2.5 years apart, and you know, so that was traumatic for them. You know, that's when they started seeing how my alcoholism probably was affecting them. I don't know if they knew how much we were doing, you know, drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. But I know it was very traumatic to see the car later. You know, I think Olivia went with her dad to go to the to see the, you know, the car in the lot or whatever, and it was burnt, you know. And so there was a lot of that kind of, you know, things happening, you know, but I don't know if I still thought I had a problem with drinking at that point. I knew I was unhappy in my marriage. One day I got drunk. Me and my husband were drinking. I got drunk enough. We went to this Mexican restaurant, and he was bragging on the ring I had on to the bartender and how he bought it and paid for everything in my life. And, you know, that was the normal with him. And I got up and I went home and I packed my car and I left him. And I think I had to be drunk to do that. So I think that was part of my story, that I'm okay with him being a drunk at. And I went and lived with a friend for a while, a really good friend that we had gone to that church together. Our kids grew up together. They're still friends to this day and everything. And I went and lived with her for about 9 months to a year. And I was legally separated. I separated from him. I could not just divorce him. That's how, you know, we had been together a long time. I could never see myself leaving him, you know, because I didn't know how to take care of myself. You know, if something happened, I called him. My car broke down on the side of the road. I didn't know how to take care of myself. At this point, I was 46 years old. I had never lived by myself. I had never paid bills. You know, I didn't feel competent. I did not feel competent in being able to take care of myself. Even though I'd raised two children and kept a household together and helped run his business, I really didn't have the confidence in myself. And it really took me being drunk to leave him. And so then after I was with my friend for a while, I still partied it up. I was single at this point, you know, having a great time drinking and drugging. And at that point, my friend said, you know, I'm really worried about how I'm worried about your drinking. And, you know, eventually you can't continue like this, you know. And even before I left my husband, I had decided to get a job and I would leave him. Even before that day, I got a job at Men's Warehouse working retail. I had worked retail in the past, and I was like, I'm going to work and I will leave him. I had made up my mind, but it did take that time, that one last time of him being the way he was, for me to do it. And so I had a job and I worked at Men's Warehouse. I did not make that much money, obviously, in retail. You know, I made like $30,000 or whatever. And so anyways, I lived with my friend for a while, kept drinking. Finally, I filed for divorce. I said, yes, you know, we're not getting back together. We just need to move on and get divorced. And so I filed for divorce, and then at that point I got a little alimony and I decided to get my own apartment. Again, I had never, this then being the first time I would be living by myself. And I got my own apartment and lived over in Sandy Springs, and, you know, would go drink every night. I would drink alcoholically. I blacked out drinking. Pretty much every time I drank at this point, I was blackout drinking. And I'd go home and leave my key in the door. My neighbor would knock on the door and say, you left your key in the door. You know, I would try to take Safe Ride home. I lived right near North River Tavern, so I could leave my car there and walk home, you know, or I'd get a cab or a Safe Ride. Back then they had Safe Ride, and then I'd walk the next day and go get my car, you know. So I was pretty much every night blackout drinking. And I had a one-bedroom apartment, and my cousin came to live with me, and I said, I drink too much, and I bring too many men home. I just want to let you know now before you come stay with me. And he said, great, me too. Tom. So anyways, he slept on my couch for a while, and You know, I was out of control. You know, I was out of control and doing things and going places I should never be and end up in, and wondering how I got home, where was my car the next day, how was I going to get to work, you know, where was my debit card. You know, it was bad. It was bad. And then I met a guy, and he started coming over and staying with me, and that is Paul. He's my husband now. And he drank just like I did, you know, and we had a lot of fun together, and we were together. We ended up moving in together after a short time, we ended up getting another place and stuff like that. And then at this point, he would take a break from drinking, but I wouldn't. You know, he would say, I can't drink today, you know, and I'd be like, well, I don't, whatever, you know. You could not drink, but don't tell me not to drink. Like, I was, you know, don't interfere with my drinking, you know, basically. And you know, I would hide empty bottles. You know, I wasn't drinking alcohol. That's why I went to North River Tavern. They would pour you this much vodka and this much cranberry. You know, I wasn't drinking alcohol at this point. I was gulping it. And I drank to get fucked up, you know. It was like, there was a point to my drinking. It wasn't for the taste. It wasn't for, it was like, I just want to be, forget. I don't want to remember anything, you know. And anyway, so he went out of town one time. I felt like I was going crazy. I was like, why can't I just drink normal? At this point, I really liked this guy too. And I'm like, now I'm just acting like a shit when I drink. I would wake up the next day and wonder what I did. I knew I would treat him badly, but I didn't know what I did. So my drinking led me to being very angry and abusive and just not a nice person. I mean, just really, you know, not okay. And his work had him travel, so anyways, but so I was like, I need to figure out what's wrong with me. I need to go see somebody, you know, because I felt like I was going crazy. And there was probably a lot of stuff in my past that I hadn't dealt with between my ex-husband and the abuse from my childhood and stuff like that. So I was like, I'm going to go and see somebody so they can fix me, you know. And anyway, so I started seeing a therapist, and I only went to her once or twice. And she just suggested I tried controlled drinking. And I had never tried that before. I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'll try that. And at that point, I could not control my drinking. And at this point, my drinking was so bad that I think it was just like coming to a head. Like, if I cannot stop. I can't go one day without drinking. And I'm abusing the people that I care about. And I'm, you know, that I need to figure this out. And I had a friend that drank like, she was the manager of the apartment I moved into, and she drank like I drank. And I would tell her, you make me feel normal. Cause I think she drank more than I drank, you know? So one day she called me and she said, I need you to come over. I don't know what happened, but I need help or something like that. I go over her house. Her face is all busted up. And she doesn't remember how she got home, if she got in a car accident, if she got beat up, what happened to her. And I looked at her, and I'm like, that's me. That's going to happen to me if I don't do something about this, you know? And so I went, you know, having all these things happen, you know, that I was realizing I can't drink normal. I can't go a day without drinking. If I don't do something, something is going to really happen to me, you know. I used to walk at Island Ford. I don't know if y'all know where that's at. It's a great walking trail down there near the river. It's beautiful. I used to go down there and walk even before I got sober, and I would pray to God, you know, just help me to get help, help me to get better, help me to know what to do, you know, and just really that's about all I would pray, you know. And I had put kind of church and any religious scriptures, anything like that, you know, but something happened where I was like, if I don't stop sinning, something worse is going to happen. And that just was like, and then again, my dad died when he was 27. He had gotten, not only in that car accident, he had also gotten a big accident where they had cut him open. They had to, I don't know if they took a spleen out or he had ruptured his spleen or something from a truck accident. He was a heavy drinker. You know, my mom would say, you know, be careful because you probably take after your dad, you know, And so that was something in the back of my head too. And I thought about him, and I don't know if you believe in angels or spirits or anything like that, but I felt like there was something telling me if I don't do something, something will happen to me. You know, at this point I hadn't gotten a car accident that hurt anybody, but I was like, if I did, how could I live with myself? So that's where I had gotten at this point when I was started to see this therapist and try to control my drinking. And for me, I couldn't. So I had gone to dinner with my son when Paul was out of town. I met him and, you know, we had a glass of wine and I said, no, I'm not going to have any more because I'm trying to control my drinking. See if I can have one or two or whatever. And I went home and I drank a bottle of wine, you know, and I was like, I just can't not drink, you know? And so I think it was just finally dawned on me. I'm an alcoholic. No more joking about it, how much I can drink. And oh yeah, sure, I'm an alcoholic. It was just like, wow, I'm an alcoholic. Now what am I going to do? You know? And, I Googled, you know, I went online and looked up, you know, AA and alcoholism. And, you know, I read a lot of different things about alcoholism and, you know, wet brain and just all these things that can happen to you if you continue, you know, with this. And it scared me. I was like, I need to get help now. Like, I'm like, there's no more playing around with this thing. This is bad where this is going to end up, you know. And I called the AA hotline, and they put me in touch with the clubhouse. And I called the clubhouse over at 8111 and spoke with somebody. And I said, I need help. And I also looked up possibly checking myself into somewhere. And my sister has mental health issues, and she's like, whatever you do, don't. Don't sign yourself up for that. That was her advice. And I said, well, I need to do something. You know, and that day that I called the AA hotline and the clubhouse, and the person I spoke to said, whatever you do, get to a meeting today before the alcohol is out of your system. And at this point at work, I kind of skipped over. I had a job downtown, and I worked at a showroom down there, and you could drink in the showroom too because we served alcohol to people, so that wasn't good. So by noon every day, I was like shaking, needing alcohol. So I was physically addicted, and you know, also. So anyways, I called my mom and both of my sisters, and I said, I need to get help. I need to come to your house tonight. And it was a Friday when I got sober. And you know, I went to my mom's house and stayed. She lives in Ackworth. So the first meeting I actually came and picked up a white chip was here at the Howe Place. And it was a Friday night. We came to the 8 p.m. meeting because I went to her house and she said, I have a little wine if you need it for detox. She's a nurse. And I said, no, I can't have anything. At this point, something told me I can't ever drink again. You know, I can't just have a little, you know, it won't work. If she gave me a little, I would just want the rest of it, you know? So, and she obviously was there to watch me, and that's why I went to her house, for detox and seizures, and you can go through a lot of things when you detox. And we came here to a meeting. I picked up a white chip, and the next day I said, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to a meeting over there where I live, and then I'll come back. And I did it. You know, it's like I looked up the meetings. I went home. I looked up 8111, where I'd passed and said, oh, God, I hope they never tell me I have to go to that place. You know, I'm like, please, that's the worst thing in the world, you know. And that's what I thought. I thought, how can I live with or without alcohol at that point? I didn't know what I was going to do. Like, and in this point in my life, you know, before I came in, it was like I didn't care whether I lived or died. I wasn't suicidal, but I really didn't care what happened to me anymore. And the people I hung out with, they didn't care, you know, and all of a sudden I'm like, I have children and they kind of still need me. I know at this point they're young adults, but they still need their mom, you know? And, I left out a little bit of stuff. You know, my daughter called me and told me she was pregnant and I was in a blackout. And then the friend that I went and lived with called me one day and said, did you know Olivia's getting married? And I said, what? This is my daughter who I'm so close with, supposedly, you know? She's like, yeah, Hannah said, you know, our kids know each other. Hannah said, Olivia's going to the courthouse. She's going to get married. I'm like, what? So that was her and her husband now. They got married on February 14th. I got sober on February 23rd. You know, I my daughter who was pregnant and about to get married at the courthouse, I was, you know, I called her and I said, you know, I heard you're getting married and I don't know anything about it and I want to be there and don't you want people there and your family? And she said, no. I said, well, can I come? And she said, yes. So I was the only one that got to go and watch her and her husband, Bruce. They're married today. They have a 10-year anniversary right near my 10-year anniversary, you know. And so I got to go watch her be married and my grandson and my grandchildren never seen me drink, you know, so that's really cool. And Demetrius is 9. He'll be 10 this summer. And so anyways, that was part of me getting sober too. It was like, okay, I'm about to be a grandmother and this isn't cute anymore, you know, stumbling in, falling down in bar bathrooms. And so all those things that led up to me getting sober and the part of getting sober, this is the good part. You know, that was all the bad shit that happens and that what brings us here or what brought me here. You know, it had to get bad before I could see that I really needed help. And when I came in, I thought, oh my God, how boring. What a boring life I'm about to start, you know. And really, I didn't know it was going to be a life. I just was like, I just want to quit drinking for this weekend, just today, one day, you know. And it led into 2 days and 3 days. And I stayed with my mom for a few days. The first speaker meeting I came was the second day of sobriety. And it was the speaker meeting here at 8 p.m. on a Saturday night. And I don't remember anything he said other than he was a middle child and I related to him. So, you know, it's like, I hope that today somebody's new in sobriety and something I say connects with them, like that meeting did for me. And so that was my journey. I went back home. I called Paul, this guy that I had been seeing a year, and I'm like, I have an issue. I need to quit drinking and I don't know what that means for us. So, you know, yeah, sorry, whatever. And he was like, well, you know, I really care about you and I don't want this to be the end of our relationship. So that we stayed together. And, you know, at that point, this was my first year of sobriety, you know, and they say, don't make changes your first year, you know, don't do anything drastic. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this. And I'm gonna get sober. This is what I'm doing, you know. The things that I heard in the meeting, you guys gave me hope in here. You know, I saw people pick up a chip, a 24-hour chip, a 30-day chip, a 60-day chip, and I was like, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. And you said if you drank every day to go to a meeting every day. You suggested 90 and 90. And since I had been in that church that was like a cult, I was like, if they tell me I have to do one thing, I'm out of here. And nobody told me I had to do anything. They said, if you want what we have, then you'll do what we do. And I did. I wanted what you guys had. I walked in a meeting and y'all were laughing and having fun and joking at yourselves and, you know, laughing at yourselves about things you did, you know, and you shared about your lives and your recovery and going through difficult times and all that. And so the first year I didn't make changes. I stayed with my job and I still work for that company 10 years later, you know, and it's changed over the 10 years, but it's a good thing. And I didn't leave Paul. We didn't split up, but I thought about it when, you know, I had to do the third step prayer. It was like, help me to be willing to give up whatever is not going to help keep me sober, you know? And so I was willing to give up whatever was going to get in the way of my sobriety. And at one point we were going to break up and I had went and stayed with a friend, a dog sit for my friend. I was like, I need to go. I'm going to sit for her. I'm going to think about what's best. Cause I really was in conflict whether to stay with him or not. So I went and stayed with her and my sister called and she was like, Eric's missing. That's my nephew. And he was 19, and she's like, I don't know where he's at, and, you know, and I was like, okay, that's weird, all right, well, just let me know what happens, you know, let me know, keep me in touch and all that, and then, I don't know, 24 hours, 48 hours later, I got a call, and they had found him, and he had shot himself, and he was 19, my nephew, and I know he experimented with maybe drinking or drugs, he smoked weed, I think, but I don't know if he really wasn't, I don't know if he had that. We have mental health issues in our family, which also is alcoholism and addiction. They go hand in hand. And I let people know in my family here, and I let Paul know, and I said, you know, I called my mom. She's like, my mom always has these words of wisdom, just little jags. She's like, this is no time to be strong. If Paul wants to go with you, just let him go. And I'm like, okay, fine, you know. So anyways, that was a turning point for our relationship, because he was always there for me. He was there for me when we were drinking. He was there for me when I said, I'm going to get sober. He was there for me when he was like, no, this is important. I want to drive you down. You know, I want to be there for you and your family and all that. So we didn't split up, you know, we stayed together, and I navigated being in a relationship in sobriety that I had never done before. I could run and throw things away before, you know what I mean? And so sobriety taught me how to deal with things in life, you know, good and bad. And I got to go down. At this point, I was 6 months sober when my nephew committed suicide, and I didn't drink. I didn't pick up, and I was there for my sister and my family. You know, she was on she had to take some drugs just to deal with it, you know. And I thought about that. I thought, my God, you know, how do you get through this, to lose your son like this? And but I've been there over the years for her, you know. And you know, it's just, there's been good things that happen in sobriety and bad things, but I haven't had to pick up, you know. And as time went on, you know, in sobriety, I learned how to do my job better. You know, I learned how to be responsible. I learned how to be there for my family when they needed me. You know, Paul and I were together probably 6 years, and then I remember not having health insurance and tell, okay, I need help. I had to have surgery. That's what it was. I needed to have surgery, and I was like, okay, maybe we should just get married. And I went to my sponsor, and I said, okay, I'm thinking about getting, I need to have surgery, because I have a cyst on my ovary, and maybe Paul and I just need to get married. Even when I told Paul, he was like, what? What just happened? You know, we were fine. And my sponsor's like, that's probably not a good reason to get married, you know. And I was like, oh, okay, you're right, you know. And so we didn't get married for insurance, you know. She said, is that really how you want to get married? And I said, no, you're right, you know. So I relied on my sponsor. When anything big happened, I may not talk to Maureen all the time, but when there's a big life crisis or something that's really bugging me, you know, I reach out to her. And she's got 30-something years sobriety. I can't remember. She picks up her chip on February 14th. So we always have our birthdays together, but she's out of town now. But anyways, so, you know, I didn't get married for insurance. Eventually, we got married, you know, in sobriety, and we had a wonderful wedding, you know, in a big canoe. And, you know, I think Olivia was pregnant with Audrey at that wedding, you know. I don't know. Life is just so great now. Like, I enjoy my life. I'm so grateful for this program. It's done so much for me. It's helped me to stand up for myself, have confidence, you know, really the peace and serenity. I know you know the 9-step promises, and you know, when we share our stories, we talk about what happened, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it's like now are like the 9-step promises. You know, there's a new peace and serenity I have in my life. I don't worry about, you know, when I came in and I did my 4-step, I didn't have all these resentments. I had so much fear. I had fear of, how am I going to support myself? How am I going to pay my taxes off? How am I going to, like, all these fears. And most of them were financial fears, because I had never supported myself, you know? And, you know, and I've got to walk through things in sobriety. And so now I feel like when things come up, it's like, well, you know, look at that I walked through, that fire over there, and this and that. You know, I've been able to handle things. At one point I was still, after being divorced a couple years, I was still on my husband's, the house we had together, his first, second, and third mortgage, and I couldn't buy a house. And I went to my sponsor, and I said, I don't know what to do. I can't, you know, I can't get a loan, because I'm on all these damn mortgages with him, and da-da-da-da. She said, Carolyn, he's a smart businessman. You go to him and you say, I need to be taken off of him. And so I wrote an email to him and I said, it's been 2 years since we've been divorced. I'm on 3 mortgages. I'm trying to buy a house. I need to be removed from these mortgages. Whether you have to sell or refinance, you need to figure it out. Because he has his own business and, oh, it's so hard to get, you know, it doesn't matter. It didn't matter. That had nothing to do with me. It had to do with him. And guess what? He figured it out. It took him a year. You know, he had to put whatever he had to do it. But he figured it out and I took me off the mortgages. Even my son was like, why, Mom, why do you want to do that? Because I need to move on, you know? And those are the things that I got to do in sobriety and learn how to not be afraid. And the experiences that I have get to help somebody else, I hope. You know? Seems like everybody in sobriety is going through a divorce, right? But, so, you know, it's like, you know, things that I get to go through, like the third step prayer talks about. You know, take away these difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those that would help. It's not about me. It's about being able to show somebody else how I got through these things. You know, I mean, we've paid off so much. I share this a lot because I have a lot of the financial fears. I was 1099'd at my job and I had all this IRS debt, you know, and I mean, I paid off thousands and thousands, tens of thousands to the IRS. You know, I mean, probably over 50,000. And I was like, how am I going to do this? I make this little bit of money, you know? Well, it happened because I continued to do the next right thing. And it just took care of itself. You know, I've had to get outside help. With that, I needed a CPA to help me, an accountant, you know? And he set up a payment plan. I just made the payments and it disappeared. You know, eventually it was gone. You know, I've had to get, 5 years sobriety, I started having a lot of anxiety. I went to go see somebody about that, and she helped me to deal with my past. At the same time that I dealt with that at the 5 year, my abuser got cancer, and my mom had to go take care of him. She had so much guilt to go take care of him. I said, Mom, he's your brother. It's okay. She said, but he hurt you guys when y'all were younger. I said, Mom, he's dying. He has nobody. You know, and she wanted to go, but she didn't want to go. And I got to give her permission. It was okay to go take care of this person who was dying. And, you know, and that, I don't need to hold on to that. It's not doing me any good. It's not doing him any good, you know. Let him pass. Let him go. And he hung around so long till I went down and said goodbye to him. He wouldn't go. He had his bag packed by the door. I don't know if you know anything about hospice and moving on to the other side, but he had a suitcase and his shoes by the door, but he wouldn't leave. And I went down and said goodbye to him, and he passed maybe 2 days later. You know, that's part of what this program has done for me, you know. And he couldn't leave, you know, and we got to say, it's okay. I forgive you. It's over with, you know. And, you know, my life is beautiful today. I get to go take my grandkids today. Audrey is 5. And Demetrius is 9, and they are full of energy, and I'm always exhausted the next day, but we get to go to the ballpark today, and he has a scrimmage, and, you know, we got a new puppy. It's like we just had a baby, because I was up at 4 with this baby. And, I mean, you know, I've bought a couple houses. I started a business in sobriety. I remember picking up my 6-year chip in Hawaii, which was a really cool story. And we planned a trip in February to go to Hawaii, and it's my 6-year anniversary, and we had been there for maybe half a week or something. I hadn't been to a meeting. I always go to a meeting when I go out of town, at least one. And I've met some cool people and experienced that this is the same everywhere you go. And so I was like, I'm going to go to a meeting today. And I'm like, oh, and it's my birthday, my anniversary. I go to this meeting in Hawaii. In Maui, Wailea side, and the day I go is at my actual birthday, and it's the last, whatever, Saturday or Sunday of the month, or whatever they do, and they celebrate the birthdays for the month, and everybody got a lei and a cupcake, and they stood up and got to tell their short story, their story, and I was like, this is so cool, you know, that I get to do this. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I guess just the right time and the right place, you know, and you know, that's been one of the best experiences, that trip, you know, going there and doing that. And I don't know where I was going with that part of that story, but anyways, just the life is amazing, you know, and we were there for 10 days. I mean, it was a really awesome trip. And, you know, so I get to go enjoy vacation. Before, when I was getting in the beginning of sobriety, I was like, how am I going to enjoy vacation without a drink? But my vacations ended in falling in the water. Not this, like, pretty picture you see, you know. I always, you know, like the Corona billboard with the beer in the bucket. That's not my vacation when I drank. That's not it. The bucket was empty, and I was, like, head down somewhere. You know what I mean? It's like, you know. And so I remember romancing the drink is not good for me. Now I can go. We've been to Hawaii. We went to the Keys in September one year, and I was determined to go see this. There's an underwater park, whatever you want to call it. And I was like going to see. It's like Mother Mary underwater, right? And it's been there for years. And I'm like, I'm going to go see this thing. And the water was filled with jellyfish. And it was September, so the water was rough. It was mucky instead of clear down there, and like all these little algae things in the water, and jellyfish everywhere. And the guy's like, "It's fine. They're not going to sting you." My husband's like, "I am not going in that water." And I'm like, "I'm going. I'm going to see this damn thing." And I did it. And now I think, why did I do that? That was insane. But it was like, that's what sobriety does. I had no fear. You know, I was like, I can do anything now. If I can do this, I can do anything. And that's how I feel. I feel like I can walk through things. I hope nothing bad happens because I've said that. But, you know, I can walk through what is presented before me without picking up. It's not always perfect and great, you know, but I can't believe I swam with all those jellyfish. It gives me the creeps now. But anyways, I've got to do amazing things in sobriety. I've got to figure out who I am and you know, I love art and gardening and drawing, and I love my family. I go on vacation with my family every year still, and some of them get drunk, but it's not me. Oh. It's not me, and it's okay. You know, maybe they'll have their own story one day. But anyways, thank you guys for this time. Thank you for letting me share my story with you guys. I really appreciate it. I think I'm at the end.
You're good.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Yeah.